Hello, and welcome to the Harassment-Free Workplace Podcast. I'm April Thoreau of Navigating Integrity Associates. This podcast is for CEOs and HR professionals of small and medium-sized businesses to learn practical suggestions that can be used right away to address harassment in the workplace. We are committed to creating workplaces that work for everyone. Welcome. Hello, and welcome to the last episode of the first season of the Harassment Free Workplace Podcast. My name is April Thoreau. I'm your host, and I am so excited to introduce Marianne Kerr to you. Hello, Marianne.
Hello, April. Thanks for having me.
Oh, I'm so excited to have you here. You are a Chief Happiness Officer, which is really exciting. Let me read your bio to introduce you to all of our listeners. Marianne Kerr is Chief Happiness Officer, CEO, and Principal Consultant with the Medalist Group. Marianne has worked in the social profit sector for 34 years and helped raise over $110 million. She has led at the local, provincial, national, and international level and is passionate about her family, feminism, and continuous learning. Marianne knows that successful organizations create and nurture a climate where everyone understands their role, politics are minimal, engagement is high, and turnover low. Environments where employees co-create the roadmap to mission delivery. Compassion, kindness, and a deep commitment to the co-creation of collaborative and productive workplaces are core to her work. Marianne has participated on many social profit boards and committees, and her first book, Tarnished, It's Time to Rebuild, Reimagine, and Repurpose the Social Profit Sector, will be out this fall. Marianne earned her master's in organizational leadership and is currently applying to do her PhD. If that doesn't come through, Marianne will take her research idea and turn it into her next book. Welcome, Marianne.
Oh, thank you. Wow, that sounded really good. Who wrote that?
Isn't it funny to have your bio read to you? I always find it when I'm doing these two, it's like, that's me. That's right. Okay, great. Well, why don't you tell me about being the Chief Happiness Officer? What does that mean? What do you do as a Chief Happiness Officer?
Oh, my goodness. I love this question. When I decided to reimagine my own company, I decided I wanted a different title. You know, I'd been president and CEO of the Medalist Group since 2006, but I did a different sort of work. And I always believed in my career that happiness at work mattered. And I had bosses who would say to me, it's not your job to make your staff happy. Mm. And I thought, I just don't agree. I don't agree. I mean, we could debate what happy means, but at the end of the day, happy, engaged, committed staff will make all the difference to delivering the missions of the organizations where people work. And I've primarily worked in the social profit, nonprofit, charitable sector. So that's where it came from. And also, I was ready to really step into owning my own happiness, right? Mm. I think it's just, there's a lot of stuff that goes on in the world that you have no control over. Things happen to you. I'm not someone who believes you can just go out and achieve the Canadian or American dream no matter what. That's not my point of view. But I do think I can choose a form of happy as my response to many, many things. So that's where it came from.
Mm, choosing happy. I love that. So really, like, consciously, I'm going to choose to be happy. And sometimes that's difficult, especially if you're in a toxic workplace and it's not going well or that sort of thing. So
exactly.
So when we were talking about doing the podcast and what we're going to talk about, I usually ask my guests for three things that people can do. And Marianne pushed and said, can we do five? I said, sure, why not? It is the last episode of the season. So let's go with abundance as opposed to scarcity. So what are the five things that people can do to increase their happiness at work?
Yeah. So, well, thank you, first of all, for letting me push a little. Partly in my nature. The way I came up with these five pieces is actually to take the letters in happy and talk about what they mean. So the first letter is H. And for me, it speaks to humility. So happiness is connected to humility, because if you work in environments where leaders have humility, where leaders don't pretend to know everything all the time, where leaders are open to listening, right? All of that is related to humility. So that's why it's the first piece for me. So humility and having it yourself is important too.
Yeah. Whenever I hear humility, I always think of being aware of your own ego, right? Like just being aware of how the ego is at play. You know, if there's a leader where it's all about me, it's all about me, it's all about me, nobody wants to work in that environment. Nobody feels valued or acknowledged in that world. So for me, it's always like, how do I get my ego out of this? How do I remove my ego? How do I come with like an open space? So I kind of see those as two the same. So humility.
Exactly. Beautifully said.
Beautiful. Okay, great. Okay. And then also, I think it also, it's like when leaders lead with humility, it also fosters it in everybody else. And so, you know, it's being rewarded for being vulnerable, which is Timothy Clark's definition of psychological safety. So
you just took the words right out of my mouth. I was about to say, you know, humility creates a space where I can be vulnerable. I can say, you know, April, I'm not sure how the answer to that question, but I'm going to look into it. And I'm not fearful that not knowing is going to cost me my job, or that not knowing is going to cause me to be humiliated publicly, or any of those things, right? It is at the core of everything, I think. Humility, it really is.
And I also think there's huge value in honoring being in the inquiry. So it's okay to not know and to be in that unknown, uncertain space, because I think that's where innovation can really breathe and be birthed, is in that place of in that place of humility. So
And you know, without it, there is no innovation, right? Because people are fearful.
Exactly.
Right? And you can't have creativity and innovation in a fearful environment.
Yeah. So it's okay not to know. Because, you know, our schooling tells us the opposite, right? Like in the Western schooling, we're taught you have to know the answer, you have to know the answer, you have to know the answer, you have to know the answer. So getting to the work world and like, it's okay not to know the answer. Let's sit with that and let's be with that and look at different angles of it. And
exactly.
Yeah.
So, beautiful. So the next one is attachment. So A is for attachment. And this really speaks to the idea that you need to, again, you know, people would say to me in the workplace, you don't have to like the people you work with. You just have to be able to get along and do the work, and you don't need friends at work. I disagree. I think that it may be true. I don't have to like you or everyone, but there do need to be some people who you connect with, who you feel a sense of belonging with. And it's just like high school, right? You know, they say kids who succeed in high school, part of their success is related to having an adult somewhere in the system that they can connect with, but also having even just one best friend, right? So I really believe attachment at work is important.
And that gives that sense of belonging, which is lovely. Yeah. Is there, what do you say when those, you know, thinking about high school and having those, you know, that friend, what about the cliques and the cliques and the, like, how do you deal with that in the work environment?
Well, I don't like them. and I think as a leader, you have an opportunity when you see it happening to address it, right? I think so much is left unsaid in the workplace about those sorts of things. So on the one hand, you do want, of course, there are going to be some people who tend towards another more. Right. So sometimes it's age related. Right. I mean, maybe you're not getting invited out to go, I don't know, clubbing on Saturday night because you're not, that's not the age and stage of life that you're in. And that's OK, as long as it's not done in an exclusive way. Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, someone could very easily say, hey, April, want to come to the club this week? Right. And you can say, that's so nice of you to ask, right? So, I'll be home with a little one or whatever it is, right? I think it's about the nature of individuals, not allowing it to become cliquey. You can have groups, you can have teams, you can have connection without there being a clique. The only thing that's different is that you include, you offer to include. It's simple, really.
It really is.
Be simple. Nice.
Be nice to each other. Be kind, please.
Please.
Okay, so we've got humility, attachment. What's the next one?
The first P is for peace. So interestingly, there were some really cool LinkedIn posts this year where people were putting up job postings and saying, would you want to work here? Because I know I wouldn't. And they were job postings that said things like, you know, it's a supercharged, high energy. I can't remember all of the words, but they were words that said, we basically work 24/7. And if you can't keep up, we don't want you. It literally said that sort of thing. And that's not a peaceful environment. And I'm not saying that it shouldn't be productive and it can't be you know, a go-getter kind of a place, because I mean, I think most of the time that is how I am. I'm a bit like an energizer bunny, but I want to know that there is a place I can go for peace, for quiet, for an opportunity to just think, and not be so overrun as so many people are by the day-to-day that you never get the time you need, right, to do the big infrastructure work or the strategic thinking work or the generative thinking work. So you need a workplace that allows for that kind of peace. It's not downtime, right? Mm-hmm. It's not unproductive time, but it's time where you can be quiet and peaceful and connect with other parts of the work that are not about the day-to-day rush of it. Peace.
Finding that peace at work. How lovely is it? It's, you know, as a solopreneur myself, you know, thinking peace at work. Oh, that's something for me to take on too, of just finding that quiet time at work and not being in the go, but just,
The next P is purpose, April.
Purpose.
Which I know you have found in your work. And I think it's critical that people feel a connection to the work. And it doesn't matter. I had a very interesting conversation with someone who said, you know, the not-for-profit or the social profit sector seems to believe that they somehow have cornered the market on purpose, right? On the concept of purpose at work. But it isn't true. You can have deep purpose working at the local chapter of your bank, right? It's all in the engagement with people. It's all in how you interact. It's all about what does the way I work, what does the how of my work do to connect me with purpose? So if the organization's role is retail banking, right? How does my purpose as the receptionist connect to all of that? How am I connected to whether that person received a loan, right? Or a mortgage, or just had a happy experience when they arrived at the bank. So purpose, super important.
Are you a Simon Sinek fan?
I am a Simon Sinek fan, yes.
Okay, yeah, I was just saying, because he's got the find your why and lead with why, and it's all about finding that why, and he's speaking the same language. It's all about find your purpose and have your purpose match with your company's purpose so that it's exciting to get out of bed in the morning, and it's exciting to go to work and wanting to get up and make a difference, or whatever your purpose is, whatever your why is.
Yeah, and it's an alignment of values, right? Mm-hmm. But maybe where I would be slightly off from Simon would be to say, it's not that your values are misaligned. It's that you know that you want, it's the how of the work. I'm going to go back there. It's the how of the work. So as long as, you know, you may be selling widgets, and selling widgets may not be the thing you most want to do in the world, But if you are selling widgets with kindness and inclusivity and collaboration and great inter-office communication and teamwork and all of those things are there, then you can find purpose, even if selling widgets isn't what you chose to do with your life.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's actually more in alignment with what Simon is saying. Okay. Is that, yeah, he was talking about, I'm reading his book right now, and he was talking about a guy who sells steel. You know, he just sells steel. And he's like, I don't understand how this is aligned with my why. And he's like, but you've been there for 23 years and love it. And then when they looked back, it was like, it's environmentally friendly steel. And that's what was like really singing for this guy, was his why was the how they're making the steel. And then that leads back to his why of, you know, wanting to create a planet for his kids and his grandkids that it's going to sustain them. Right. So, I think there's definitely some alignment there, but yeah, finding your purpose.
So beautiful. That lines up really beautifully with the why, which is yearning. And apparently I need to read more Simon Sinek, because I have watched some of his videos, but I haven't actually read any of his books.
Yeah.
And for me, the why and the yearning to learn is super important. Mm. And it isn't the same for everyone. So, what you want to learn may be different. It may be that I want to learn a new software program. It may be that I want to be really challenged and take on a new language. It might be that I want to hone my leadership skills or figure out how to advance a different organizational culture. It's the yearning itself that matters, right? It's creating an environment where people can yearn to learn, and that as an organization, you recognize your role in providing that space and providing those opportunities. And it's doable no matter how much money you have to put into professional development. It is so easy to access information today. It could be a book club within the organization. It's just so easy to do, but it's also easy to ignore and overlook. So I think it's a critical component to a happy workplace.
I think so too. And it's definitely part of the culture for sure. Right. So it's like if you've got a culture where learning is, or education is prized and valued, then you're going to want to learn more. And, you know, the more educated, the more continually learning all of your employees, all of your team are, it's got to pay off. The investment's got to pay off for sure. So,
exactly.
Yeah.
And so much fun for folks to share what they've learned, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, when they go to a conference or have a professional development day of some sort, to come back and share that learning with those that are interested. Mm-hmm. That's a great opportunity. It's another learning for them. It's another growth opportunity for them. Mm-hmm. It's amazing.
Wow. So happy. I love it, Miss Chief Happiness Officer. Humility, attachment, peace, purpose, and yearning to learn, which is fantastic. So tell me how, like, I know you work in the not-for-profit sector. So how, like, are you a consultant that goes in and works with the not-for-profits to help them increase their happiness?
Oh, I love it. I love the question because I took a bit of flack with the title. There are many who don't like it because it doesn't say what I do exactly. Mm-hmm. But it is true. So I do culture co-creation. I do team building. I do organizational health audits. I do lots of strategic planning, but all of it through an appreciative inquiry lens, right? So I'm always asking questions to get at the root of what is happening in organizations, and through an employee lens. So I am always considering the work through employees. And that's a little different in the not-for-profit sector, because our tendency is always to think about the work through the recipient of the service, right? We almost ought, because of course we do, and it will always be true, but there has been very little attention paid to the people who are delivering those services, right? Very little. And so there's often a debate around whether or not it is worse culturally, more toxic in the not-for-profit sector or the for-profit sector. I've only worked in the not-for-profit sector, but every single person I know who has done both will tell you, absolutely every single one, that it was worse for them in the social profit, nonprofit, charitable sector.
Wow.
And the theory could be that people gravitate, I have no research to back this up, but that people gravitate to the sector because they are caring people, right? So you see lots of research, for instance, that say nurses are bullied a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I've even heard midwives are bullied a lot.
My hand is up in the air.
I see that. And so these, again, are caring professions, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So maybe we're people with a greater sense of empathy and kindness. And not only do we stand up for ourselves when poor behavior happens, we will stand up for other people when poor behavior happens. And mm-hmm. that creates a kind of perfect storm, right?
Mm. I was once told that the reason why healthcare can be so toxic is that it attracts two types of people. It attracts those carers, the empathetics, so the empaths, and it also mm-hmm. attracts the narcissists, the I want to be the one to save the world, it's all about right. me, that sort of thing. And so when you get that narcissist and empath together, just
right.
Right. So I can definitely see that in the not-for-profit sector as well.
Absolutely true. I love that.
Yeah. So, and it is a perfect storm because you've got people where it's all about me, it's all about me, it's all about me. And then you have all these caring people who just want to, they can feel all of that. And then it's like, ooh, and the tension that can create. And
yeah. It's shocking, isn't it? Because I think you go into those caring professions believing that you're going to be in a caring culture, a compassionate culture. So it's a little different. If I was working at Amazon and there was bad behavior, I would kind of expect it. I wouldn't be okay with it, but the expectation that it might happen would be there. Whereas in caring professions, you don't expect it, especially when you're young.
Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. It once was.
Yes. Yeah. It was actually probably the thing that broke my heart the most about being a midwife was that I expected the sisterhood, you know, like right. as a midwife, our job was all about empowering women. And so mm-hmm. I assumed as us empowering women, we would be empowering each other. And that's not what it was. And there was a couple of pockets of goodness, but then there was a whole bunch of not that. And it broke my heart. It really did. So I can see the correlation in the not-for-profit world as well. So
it is heartbreaking.
Yeah. I mean, let's sit in the inquiry because I'm sure we don't know the answers, but it's like, how do we address that? How do we get the not-for-profit sector being a beautiful place to work? Because people have so much purpose who go there.
Mm-hmm. You know, if I were to give just one piece of advice to every leader out there, I would say, start listening to your staff. Start listening, because I think there is very little listening going on. And yet there's so much wisdom in these organizations, and particularly among those who are not the closest to the issues, because those closest to the issues are experiencing it. So, you know, if we talk about homelessness, it's not the staff who work in homelessness, it's those who are homeless who are closest to the issue. Mm-hmm. But within an organization, the staff working with the homeless, right, are the closest to the issue. Mm-hmm. And the incredible kind of depth and breadth of knowledge these folks bring to the table is something worthy of our listening. And I don't think it happens very much. And it's a great place to start.
Wow. That's probably the whole podcast in itself. Sit down and listen, and really listen for the sake of understanding of what's really going on. Yeah, it's funny because I'm just making the correlations. I just felt like nobody was listening to me. It was like, and nobody cared. Like nobody cared to find out what was going on. Nobody cared to find out how my world was going. And I'm like, you know, this is not okay, you know? So yeah. And you know, we're all where we need to be now, and it's
yay.
All, yeah, yay. it's all turning out for the better and it's where it's supposed to be. But it really is. My heart goes out to all those caring professions and how can we make it a happier place to be where we can really support and love and nurture each other and empower each other. And let's just listen to each other, listen and hold space because we're really good at it. And I guess it's just, you know, we do it for our clients and our, you know, it's just, we don't have anything left for each other kind of thing. So
Yeah. All the research I did for my book, April, at the end of the day, it showed me that people want really three things. So outside of salary and benefits and all of those things, which really matter less, people want to be respected, included, and feel that they belong. And that's so critical. And every human being wants that. It's nothing to do. It doesn't matter what job you have. That's what people are looking for.
Absolutely. And it's great. The people who I'm just going through my personal life right now, I'm thinking of people at work who really love their work. They feel so valued and acknowledged and they're a part of the team and they feel like they're a part of it. And it's all about including each other. And yeah, it's so great. So great. Well, thank you so much, Marianne. Thank you for being here. Thank you for being a chief happiness officer. I love, love, love that. Let's all choose more happy in our world, shall we? I was just watching this thing online, telling you too much of my personal life here, but you know, getting stuck in the Facebook world, there was an audition recently, a woman named Night Birdie on Factor X or I don't know, one of those. And she's got stage 4 cancer. And, you know, her quote was, you know, I'm not going to wait for my life to get better to choose to be happy.
Right.
And it's like, oh yeah. You know, she's auditioning for her dream as she's dying, right? You know? And she's like, I'm choosing happy right here, right now. I think it was Night Birdie is her name or something.
Yeah, that's amazing. Good for her.
Yeah. And like, what a great message to the world. But let's just choose happy. And we've just told you how to do it. So thank you so much, Marianne. Thank you for your stand for the not-for-profit sector. Thank you for your stand for all of those employees working in that sector to make it a better place. Because they really are there because they're called to. And when it becomes toxic, that's just no fun. When your passion and your workplace collide, it's never fun. So thank you for being that person to make a difference in the not-for-profit sector. Truly, truly appreciate what you do. Thank you for coming onto the podcast. Thanks for being here, Marianne.
My pleasure. It was really an honor to be here, April. Thank you.
Excellent. And for our listeners, this is our last episode of the first season. We are going to take a summer break, but please, please feel free to share and like and rate and review our podcast because that really helps with our ratings. And also listen to all of our other past episodes. We now have 19 episodes. So go back and enjoy the ones that you haven't listened to. Listen to those over the summer. Share it. Talk about it to your friends. And we look forward to seeing you back in September. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you for sharing the podcast. It is, I love that this conversation is getting out to the world. And have a good summer. We'll see you in September. Thank you for joining us for the Harassment Free Workplace Podcast. Subscribe now wherever you listen to podcasts so that you don't miss an episode. And please spread the word. Feel free to send us feedback, questions, and suggestions for future guests you'd like to hear from. We'd love to hear from you. For more information on workplace investigations and assessments, please visit www.harassmentfreeworkplace.com. Till next time.